हरिः
O great sage, graciously be pleased to listen to the prayer of my humble self, for my mind is troubled by affection for my daughter. Verse 8, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains. Kardama says, by seeing you, all my suffering has been destroyed, but one suffering hard to remove remains in my heart. Having been given relief by your mercy, I will remove that suffering also along with the others which have gone. You are an ocean of mercy. I have one suffering that does not go away even by the power of discrimination. I think it should say Swayambhuva. Yeah, no, because it doesn't make sense. Otherwise, then, because last chapter was when Kardama spoke. Now this chapter is, yeah. In his purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada writes, when a disciple is perfectly in consonance with the spiritual master, having received his message and executed it perfectly and sincerely, he has a right to ask a particular favor from the spiritual master. Generally, a pure devotee of the Lord or a pure disciple of a bona fide spiritual master does not ask any favor either from the Lord or the spiritual master. But even if there is a need to ask a favor from the spiritual master, one cannot ask that favor without satisfying him fully. Swayambhuva Manu wanted to disclose his mind regarding the function he wanted to execute due to affection for his daughter. Right, so here's the dynamic relationship. Is that you have the spiritual master-disciple relationship or any of this kind of where you have authority in the junior. So then, is that if you're following the instruction or the direction properly, sincerely, and having accomplished that, then satisfying the authority, then asking for something that is a meaning. Right? Because you've actually done your part in the relationship. They've given the instruction, you've taken it, sincerely followed it. Then if you ask something, but in general, pure devotees don't ask, but if you do, that's the only time you can ask. You understand? So, therefore, the Vedic puts the emphasis on what's your obligation. Then because you've performed your obligation, then there's discussion of rights. Right? The modern is, it's all about my rights. Yes, they are your rights, but first you have to perform your obligation. Right? Just like I can say, it's my right, I can walk into a store and get something from the store. But what is that based on? My obligation to give the guy who runs the store the money. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's the whole, yes.
So then Srila Prabhupada said, first deserve, then desire. It's the
yes.
same principle.
It's the same thing. Same thing. It's when it means you may have a desire, but unless you deserve it, what's the meaning? Right? Because otherwise, why you'd be making an endeavor for something that is not yours? Right? Because the idea is that if you perform your duty, you're performing a duty in connection with what is actually your need. And if you're performing the duty only, if Abhideya is being performed with the proper knowledge, then only you can get the prayojana. But to say I deserve the prayojana and not make the endeavor and not have the knowledge, then what's the meaning? So that's your
sahaja.
Yes, sahaja. It's just it's the yeah. You have that aspect. the aspect of it's just we want, but someone else has to get. It's my right. But if someone else is supposed to give me, that puts us in a dependent situation. But at the same time, is in this discussion, it's always about how I'm independent. I'm free. I get what I want. Do you understand how it is? Because it always has to balance. You always have to balance this masculine feminine principle, right? And which is interesting because you know we talk a lot of this masculine feminine principle, but then as we come up, we'll see Devahuti asked Kapila. She wants to know about Purusha and Prakriti. And Prabhupada says that's the basis of the Shankya philosophy. You know, because his Purusha is the Lord and Prakriti is his energy. Right? And then all aspects of that. So it always has to balance. The Vedic, it will balance in a progressive way, a very nice way. And if you don't use that, you oppose that, then you'll have a balance, but it'll be out of whack. You know what I'm saying? So let's say like you have a local street gang. Okay? Now they're rough and ready guys. But within that, you'll have the roughest guy, and then you have everybody else who has to be submissive to him if they don't want to have their head blown off. You know? So you'll always have that balance, masculine and feminine. You can't get away from it. It's just a matter of whether you want to look nice, like here, spiritual master disciple, or you have the same surrender and same everything from... Does that make sense? Yes.
All right, so can we say that relationship is dysfunctional because it's out of this balance?
Yes, it's out of balance.
Children and parents and you know, husband and wife, it's all out of balance. That's why it's not functioning.
Yes. Everybody wants their obligation, their right, but no one wants their obligation. The child wants, parents should give everything, arrange everything, but they don't want to put in the work. They don't want to be submissive. They don't want to do their duties. You know, same husband, same wife. You know, students in the school, they all want straight A's, but they don't want to do the work. You know, that's the thing. You know, governance wants authority, but no responsibility. People want facility without obligation. You know, so that's the whole thing. Is that, you know, the government should keep a peaceful environment and I can do business. I don't want to pay tax. You know, like that. You know, so the whole thing goes is that nobody wants to do the obligation. So that's the difficulty. And then where you shouldn't be, then that's what they want. You know, Brahmins, they have to pay tax. You know, stuff like that. No, it's not supposed to work that way. It's supposed to work in the other way. Right? The big corporations get the tax break, and then to make up the balance, then you tax the temples. You understand? So things are out of whack. What are duties aren't duties anymore. This is the mode of ignorance. Because as we mentioned, that in the discussion, when you're dealing with goodness, passion, and ignorance, goodness generates progressive knowledge. Right? It's knowledge that you can progress, improve yourself. Mode of passion, you get no knowledge from it. Right? It means you may get knowledge in the way of skill, but not knowledge in the way of you as an individual. You don't learn how I am the soul and how to progress, because the whole impetus for the mode of passion is the enjoyment. Right? So mode of passion is how to enjoy the facilities. Right? Mode of goodness is perform my duties. It generates facilities, but you know it's that facilities then again for my duties. So even though you may be enjoying, it's not about the enjoyment. You know, just like let's say the host at a party is enjoying, but it's enjoying the mood of taking care of everybody else, and everybody else is happy. You understand? So it's based on duty. For the guest, then it's more based on, you know, in coming, enjoying, and taking advantage of the facility. Right? So one, you get knowledge. One, you get enjoyment. Mode of ignorance, you don't get either. That's the sad part. You don't get either. Right? So there was a question, he's not here on Tuesday. About what about enjoyment? Why aren't we talking about Kama Shastra and enjoying and everything like that? You know, like that is. But the point is you can't really use these things if you're in the mode of ignorance. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, what if I said beyond the supreme? Is there such a thing? No, right? But Western, you know, journalists will say such a thing. Like I saw, you know, going by, what is it, on a stand somewhere, you know, you're going around, I think it was in Newmarket, you know, right on the corner when you go into Lindsay Street from the big road, there's one shop that they sell magazines. And there they had the Cosmopolitan, like that. And one of the things on the cover was Beyond Kama Sutra. It's kind of like, how do you go beyond, you know, the full explanation? You know, how do you do that? You know, but that's their pull. You know, this month's article, you know, gets people to buy because it's beyond. You know, what do you mean? So that's the mode of ignorance. So they don't get knowledge. They don't get enjoyment. So basically, it's enjoyment on the level of the animals. So modern society means that basically what enjoyment they're having is the enjoyment of the animals. That's the whole thing. So if one performs one's duties, it situates you in knowledge, it elevates. Then there can be, if need, then you can ask. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea. It's because he is properly performing. Then he can ask. And then it has meaning. Otherwise, it doesn't really have meaning. Right? Then it's a request. Now, the others, it's an expectation or a demand. And that's not really, you know, that's not progressive. Yes?
In what sense their relationship was like
more of a cycle? He's a Brahmin, the other's a Kshatriya. So it's natural, they'll be. Okay. Very rare you have the other way around. It means then only you see it if the Brahmin is not a devotee and the Kshatriya is a devotee. Then there's something to learn the other way. So it's not about skill, it's about the understanding. So you see that, I think it with Janaka Raj and Gotama's son. Gotama's son, because his father's Gotama, you know, materially extremely qualified, but unfortunately did not understand that there's something beyond material skill, material knowledge. So he excelled, but because he was so, in that way, shallow in his understanding, then his guru didn't teach him about transcendence, because it was beyond his capacity. Right? So he graduated not knowing this at all. And then he goes home, you know, he's very proud of his knowledge, because the thing is, if you're proud, then you can't actually understand. So here we see, because he's humble, he actually understands the teaching, so he's qualified. But if he's proud, then the difficulty is not really qualified. And so the depth he won't know. So the skill you may know, and in the material world, if you know the skill really well, people are impressed. But in the Vedic, the skill is only a medium, a means. You have to actually know who you are and what the goal is. Because those are the points. The masculine is the knowledge, the feminine is the result. So that endeavor, that's where the two meet. Does that make sense? Because masculine is sitting there, doesn't want anything, doesn't need anything, just sits there. The feminine is sitting there and wants things. So when you put the two together, then the masculine is making the endeavor to get the facility for the feminine. It all works out. Everybody's happy. Right? Right? And then because you're so happy, then... Then we move to the end of the chapter of Kardama Muni. Yes.
Maharaj, so sometimes we face the situation when devotees, they say, you have to do this, and without taking any responsibility, as if we are obliged to do something. Is it really that we have to do, if it's not our service, or people...
If it's not your service, not you. If it's like this, you weren't thinking about it, someone comes along and says, well, Prabhupada says this,
yeah.
Even though they're technically not your authority or that, but what they say is of value. And then you take it and see, yes, that would be my duty and all that, then you just take it that Krishna's reminding you. Like Sankirtan devotees many times discuss these things. They'll be on the street, they'll be, let's say, spacing out or something. And a karmi, just straight up from karmi, will come up to them and say, you know, if you were more focused, you know, things would work out better for you. And then walk off or something like that. They just come up and make some comment that you just know that was super soul. You know? So like that, then it has meaning. But if they think that they're telling you something that doesn't fit in with your duties and they feel they have the right and you're obliged to follow it, you don't. Be pleasant. Just say yes, yes, and then do whatever you want. That's also in seventh canto.
Oh, this is where it's coming from.
Yeah. Seventh canto, then when Narad Muni's explanation, because what he's explaining is that he's talking, because he's discussing Daivavarnashram. Because, so Manu and Narad, they're discussing Daivavarnashram. Now, most people interpret it as Asurikvarnashram. So, Asurikvarnashram is an interpretation. It's not a standard. It's just taking varnashram without Krishna involved. So you may be devotional, right? But you're part of a whole big family. And so all your relatives, they all have what you should do with your life. You know, you shouldn't all this time spent at the temple or this or that service, you know, doing it for free. You could be making money with your, you know, abilities and this. And they'll say all these things. So Narad Muni points out, rather than get annoyed, because otherwise it just creates unnecessary, you know, you're already annoyed, and then if you annoy them, you get more annoyed. So then, you know, and since it's family, you have to live with them. So he just says, yes, yes, great idea, yeah, and then do what you want. He says, you under no obligation to follow, but to their face, you say, yeah, great, and like that. And if they say, no, but I always say this, you never follow, oh, you know, this little takes time. You know, just, you just keep at it, you know, like that. So just, that's the etiquette.
But I find that very difficult.
That is
when the Indian people say yes, yes, and then they say no.
What you have to remember is they're not German. Right? Yeah, in other words, that at Nuremberg, they actually thought it was an excuse that I just followed orders. Because in the German mentality, you're told you do. It's not that you think about it and you have a choice. You understand? So in other words, in the German culture, then they tell you, you should do this, and you just say, no, that's not my duty. And because that doing what you're supposed to do is there, then it's just the discussion if it's your duty or not. And so if you can prove it's not your duty, then okay, because you're supposed to do duty. You know what I'm saying? So you can be more blunt and direct there, because that's the way everybody is, right? But when you're outside, when you cross the borders any way to the north, south, or east, or west, then you have to use this technique. Does that make sense? No, it's just the way the world works, because it's other than basically means Germans as a generic entity do their duty. Everybody else, if there's culture and training, then they may do their duty. But that's considered something more aristocratic and all that. And, you know, that was taken care of, you know, during the French Revolution and all that kind of stuff. You know?
Okay, when I have now the people to tell some people what they have to do, and they tell me, yes, yes, and they don't do it, how do I deal with it?
So the next time when you tell them again, they say yes, yes, and you say, last time you said yes, yes, and didn't do it. You know, that's all. Then you catch them on that. You know, so you just say, okay, as far as my understanding of English, you can say, I speak German, so I don't know so well. Yes means you're going to do it. You didn't do it, so actually maybe you should have said no, no. Or maybe, maybe. You know? You know, so yeah. Yes, is that okay?
Yes, yes.
My daughter is this. Did we finish that? Oh, we were saying about the king. And so then Gotama's son, then he came across, he went, because, you know, being qualified Brahmin, Janaka Raj was doing some big sacrifice, so naturally the sacrifice you have sadasyas or the priests or the sadasyas who come and then they discuss philosophy, shastra, you know, whatever. And so then in one of the discussions, then because it was Gotama's son and he's highly qualified, the king then asked him about transcendental knowledge. He didn't know what he was talking about. So he thought he was just goofing on him. So he got insulted, went home. And when he came home, the father asked, oh, how was the yajna? And the, you know, how was the program? And he says, oh, it was terrible. He says, why? He says, oh, the king, he's so offensive. And it's kind of like Janaka Raj, it's like saying Yudhishthira, he's so offensive. You know, it's just like, you know, what happened? And then he said, well, you know, I'm there, and he's asking all these foolish, you know, useless questions. You know, he said, what were the questions? And then when he asked, then Gotama could understand by the quality of the question that it wasn't just a basic, you know, what is the soul? It was very intricate, detailed, depth questions that he understood Janaka Raja's realization of transcendence was greater than his. So then Gotama, all the Brahmins there, and then they took the son. They went to Janaka and asked that they could be his disciples. And he says, because I'm a king and you're Brahmins, he says, I can't do that as a duty, but you can be my guest and we can discuss and you can ask whatever you like. So he just treated them as guests, but then instructed them in everything. Does that make sense? So the culture is still there, but it only is in the transcendental. Otherwise, then it won't. But it can be, it's a temporary, it's a limited thing. Just like, let's say, the wrestler may be training the king in martial arts, but he's a Shudra. But he's his guru in that only. But he's not a guru in his life and how he... Does that make sense? So like that, or he may have a musician who teaches him. So he learns the music, but he doesn't have... But the Brahmin, he can comment on his life and how he's seeing the world and everything. So one has to be able to discriminate. First one has to accept the concept of guru and authority, and then within that one can start discriminating between the levels of guru and everything. Does that make sense? Okay. So someone who knows the subject matter then is called upadhyaya, if they're brahminical. If not, they just have that skill. But you have obligation to deal with them properly, but they don't control your life. Because let's say they know Sanskrit, they teach you Sanskrit. Or they know astrology, they teach you astrology. And they know Ayurveda, they teach that. Or let's say he knows the martial arts, he teaches that. He doesn't go beyond. Right? But if you have someone who then knows the science, the transcendental science, then they're considered in another category. So they actually have effect on your life. So then the obligation of following their instruction goes beyond. Does that make sense? So then that also goes back to the question is that if they're not taking any responsibility for your life, they can't actually comment on it. If they comment, then it's just up to you to take it or not, if it's valuable. But it's not you're obliged. You know, it doesn't matter that they're older, they're this or that, you know. It has to be there is some responsibility. Does that make sense? So that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes a distinction in levels of Siksha Guru. Right? So the general, the preacher, then they make valuable points. Now if it applies to you, you take it. If it doesn't apply to you, you're not obligated. If it's at the level of Sadguru, the Siksha Guru, like the Diksha Guru, then you're obligated, but naturally as you can acquire. And then when you have the highest, then is the founder Acharya, then that's what you have to base everything on. Like that. So you have these three levels. So like that, then the Vedas, they work on. That's the whole point, is you have to be able to discriminate the levels of gurus, right? What is authority? The kinds of authority? Where their authority? Just because someone's an authority doesn't mean he's an authority in everything. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the. My daughter is the sister of Priyavrata and Uttanapada. She is seeking a suitable husband in terms of age, character, and good qualities. Footnote 9. But so you have to deal with all these. So it's not that age doesn't matter. You know, character doesn't matter. Good qualities don't matter. You have to have all these. That's what you have to match. So whatever is the age, character, and qualities of the girl, that's what you match with the boy, and vice versa. Right? That's what you have to see works. If that works, it's nice. If it doesn't match, then it won't work so good. Yes?
So age marriage means specific difference?
It means your general recommendation is minimum 3 years difference if the boy's older. Because, as we mentioned before, is when it comes to thinking about material facilities, you know, then because the more you deal with something, the more you develop, the more it becomes sophisticated. Right? It means if I haven't thought about, let's say, a house, then I'm thinking about, oh, we should have a house. That's pretty generic. So what does that mean? You know, how big, how small is an apartment? Is it here? Is it there? How much is it you know, how do you use it? What does it look like? Okay? The girl's already been thinking about that since she was 3. Right? At 3, you want a house. By the time she's 12, she already knows exactly what house, furniture, curtains, you name it, she's already got it there. Right? She maybe, you know, hasn't figured out all the wardrobe yet, but basically the house she's already worked out. Right? So now, if there's not at least a 3-year difference, then the boy is, you know, way behind. You know what I'm saying? Because like we said, the girl at 3 starts thinking, we need a house, we need to get married. You know, and so the boy is starting to think like that in his 20s. You know, that's like 15 years, 20 years difference here. So that's why the boy is supposed to be older, because of this aspect. Right? So then 3 is recommended minimum, 10 is more of an ideal. Because not that it's specifically 10, but it should be that kind of difference in maturity. You understand? If you have a boy who, by his background, is more mature, then the age may be closer. Right? Does that make sense? So that's also the idea is that the boy may be mechanically more mature, and he needs to be because he's got to arrange things. But at the same time, socially, he has to be at least ideally equal of mature. So that means if he's not older, he's not going to be equal. Does that make sense? That's the idea. You know? Also, if they get married at a younger age, if the difference in age is not so much, they can work it out because they're both starting and the dialogue is very open. Does that make sense? If you have a teenage couple, and especially a young teenage couple, they'll discuss everything very openly. But the older they get, the more and more the contrariness and elusiveness becomes prominent.
Diplomacy.
Yeah, means the point is because then it's supposed to be the older you are, the man has more qualification to figure out the subtleties. While younger, he doesn't, and the girl doesn't worry about it. You understand? So the younger that has to be, but the older they get, the better there is that. But at the same time, it's all up to the nature of the individuals. Like that. You understand? So that's the general rule. So that's how it should be. Exceptions are always known as exceptions. So exceptions means it can happen, but it's an exception. It's not normal. Right? Because a normal person is pretty average. That's why we use the term, right? Average means where the biggest part is. Then there's a little bit outside of it on each side. Right? So there are individuals where they could have a bigger difference in age. And you could have ones where it's lesser or even opposite. Right? I saw one couple where the boy was 9 years younger than the lady. But he was a match, easily a match for her in heaviness. It's one of the heaviest ladies I know in the movement. And her husband was heavier. Like that. You know? No one could control that lady, but he could. And he'd do it without even anything. One day I was sitting there, went into the house. He's sitting at the desk doing something, and she's doing something. Something happens, she blows up like that. Just at the desk, he makes some comment, and that's it. It's all in control. Right? So then it can happen. But the point is the nature matches. It's not, oh, it doesn't matter the age. No, these all matter. So age is a general, someone at this age generally acts with this maturity. If they can act with a greater maturity or lesser maturity, you have to adjust the age. Does that make sense? So in the Vedas, you have with Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, generally the age group is closer, right? Because the materialism, the more involved. The Brahmins, it may be bigger, but still it's recommended, probably recommends 10. Because otherwise, you see, if the boy studies three Vedas, he graduates when he's 32. But who's he going to marry? He's going to marry a girl of marriageable age, means she'll be in early teens or mid-teens. But now you could say that's a 20-year difference or a 15-year difference. But the point is who can sit in a gurukul doing menial service till the 32 and act as a brahmachari? That means extremely pure person. So even though he's 32, his mood in that will still be like someone quite young. So then you match that Brahmin with that girl, that'll work. Right? The guy studied two Vedas, he graduated at 25. It'll work. Because the age is closer, the purity is good, but not as much as the other. So the age, he only studies one Veda. He graduates at 16, she marries her, she's 12. There's only a 4-year difference. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that you have to add that in. So that's why character is so important, because that then adjusts age and qualities. Does this make sense? So it's not about, oh, this is archaic, this is that. This is science. You follow it, it works. You don't follow it, it doesn't work. You have to know what you're doing.
Okay.
Like young movement, I noticed that some devotees, they are very old, older than the wife in 20 years.
If it works, I've seen a couple, the one who did the veranda on the samadhi. Because no engineers could figure it out. So they had to bring in one engineer who had done that kind of work. I think they had done it in Amsterdam airport or German, some airport, big airport. So he was one of the only ones in the world who knew how to do it. Because you have to create two curves at once. So there's nothing straight in the whole design, and he could do it perfectly. If you look at it, you know, if you go in the veranda and look up, the curve is perfect. So he was expert in that. He was one of the best or the best in the world. His wife was 30 years younger than him. But they were a great couple. You know, so it can work, but that's an exception. You don't take it, oh, it's okay. No, it's an exception. It's not okay. But if it's an exception that it works, it has the qualifications, then it's okay. Otherwise, you just don't do these things. Does that make sense? You know, that's the whole point. You know, it's just by conditioning the 50-year-old guy is going to think of the 18-year-old girl.
Yes.
But that has nothing to do with qualification. You know what I'm saying? So here, it wasn't about it was about the nature of the two persons. So they matched. It wasn't about, you know, hey, the young girls are nice. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, you apply. You're 50, you want to get married, look at somebody who's 40 or 47. You know what I'm saying? That's the rule. Because otherwise, that's one of the things that the... forget who it was. This. I think it's in Krishna book. You know, either it was a blessing or there was an anxiety about marrying, you know, an old person. You know, so when you're in your teens, basically, you know, anything outside the teens is old.
Yeah.
You know, over 30, you know, that's like, you know, that's like
grandpa.
You know, you're surprised they didn't die when the meteor hit the earth, right? You know, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So, in other words, it can happen, but if it works, it works. But it can't be taken as, oh, it's okay. No, that the standard is okay. But it, the principle, so in the standard, the principle and the detail match. In the exception, the principle matches, but not the detail. Does that make sense? Now, if you have the detail, not the principle, it's workable. It's not ideal. You want the principle and the detail. But of the two, the principle is more important. So if the principle works and the detail is different, it'll still work. But if you have no principle, no detail, that's not going to work at all. People talk, oh, we can do whatever we want. Who said? Why don't you fly? You know? Look at the traffic out there. You want to go 2 hours in traffic? You just open the window and fly back home. You know, it's like that. Hey, you know, give me a break. You know, why do you have to do what everybody else? Why do you have to be forced into all this? You understand? But they're not going to agree, so then, you know. At least you offered, you know. You open the window for them. Hey. So. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why you say, oh, but there's this. That's the... You know what I'm saying? Just like you say something, and then somebody will come up with the one exception. You know? And then try to present it as it's got the same weight as... You know what I'm saying? Like that. So the point, and it's always the same one. So it's not like, oh, I got a difficult question. No, you don't. You have the same one that, you know, 20 other people ask, because they always ask the same. There's only one exception. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Real old guy marrying a real young girl. Where's the Vedic exception? I mean, really old guy.
Like
Shravan. Yeah, that's it. Is there another one? No. So you can say, no, but Chavana married, yeah. But Chavana also changed his form so he looked like a young guy. So if you want to be 60 and marry the 18-year-old, great, but then you should, you know, look like an 18-year-old. And then it works. You know, by your mystic power, then great. You know. Oh, she was an emperor's daughter, and he was a... You know, poor sage in a hut. Yeah, but he made a flying, you know, palace with 2,000 maidservants. You know, go for it. You know? Hey, you know. You know what I'm saying? So, I say. Yeah, Simon and Garfunkel may have to rethink their songs. Okay. Somebody said?
Yeah. Let me try it. The emperor might have many concubines.
That's another thing altogether, because that's what we discussed before. That's a political arrangement. Why is he married to that? It's just a girl off the street? No, it's some really rich merchant's daughter, and they just want to have some good connection. That's why he has 57 of them. And because it's a political arrangement, that's why they all have affairs. No? Yeah. And as long as it's not too wild, then nobody worries about it. You know, so that's why you have to be careful. So there must be the equal nature, but then you have to see all the other things. You know, so it's not based on political, it has to be based on the relationship. Right? Does that make sense? You know, but if it's just the girl, you know, really wants to be married to a Grimaldi, then okay, you know, it's like, you know, even if it's not a matter of anything else, then great. Yeah?
I noticed that some girls really like to marry with older people.
That's okay, but the point is here, now in this is not just a conversation. You understand? If there's a point to be made, in other words, we've made the point. You think through all those things and you see them and go, yes, it connects. Then be happy. That's called manana. But it's not that the manana has to be an open discussion. You understand? Because otherwise everybody else thinking the same things, and yes. Then it's... You understand? So in other words, what's important with shravana so that you can do manana? Then that's what you ask. Okay? Like that. Why? Because we want to move from discuss it to get a conclusion, then move to the next, and so it's getting to the conclusion is the actual point. Now, when you function in academic circles, no one wants to get to a conclusion because the discussion's over. Then you have to do. You have to move to manana. And moving to manana, that is probably the academic's greatest nightmare. You know what I'm saying? That will freak them out the most because they just want to play with it. They just want to keep it in. You understand? So that they're going to practice it and then actually get a realization that they don't want, because then they have to change their life. So you have to be able to switch between the two academic worlds. Okay? In other words, what will be useful for understanding the conclusion so that you can apply it, that's what you ask. But the general conversation, which is a nice conversation, but that you have on a non-formal environment. You know what I'm saying? Unless it's an open, you know. If everybody was sitting in a circle, then you do that. You understand? But since we're sitting like this, then it takes on a little bit more of the, how you say? I think it's didactic, is it called? The Socratic kind of didactic kind of. You know what I'm saying? In other words, there's a teacher and a student, but it's open for discussion, questions, but it's not open for conversation. Does that make sense? Okay. So it's good, means you're thinking. So that's very good, but understand what is, you can think yourself, and then what is. Does that make sense? Because we already gave the point. You know, in other words, we were talking about the older guy marrying the younger girl. But so why is that happening? Because there's younger girls that like to marry older guys. So it goes together. Is that okay? Yeah. Yeah. So don't be afraid to ask, but just see that it's going to be useful. Okay? Okay. Srila Prabhupada explains that the purpose of Manu's introducing his daughter as the sister of Priyavrata and Uttanapada, two great kings, was to convince the sage that the girl came from a great family. Right? Because otherwise, then it may be just a girl. So he's got to show that it's coming from a great family. So you can see, right? Because you may have great parents. You know, it's like that story of the Himalayas who are going to give birth. So all the demigods came to see what happens. And then when the moment came, it was just a bunch of rats. So you may have a great personality, but it's not necessarily that they have great kids. Can, should, but they might not. Right? So now he's pointing out is that you have the king. Right? And you have his sons. So now they're great personalities. So that means then the daughter will also be king. Does that make sense? She was his daughter, and at the same time the sister of Kshatriyas. She did not come from a lower class family. Manu therefore offered her to Kardama as just suitable for his purpose. It is clear that although the daughter was mature in age and qualities, she did not go out and find her husband independently. She expressed her desire for a suitable husband corresponding to her character, age, and quality. And the father himself, out of affection for his daughter, took charge of finding such a husband. So now we're seeing bringing in the detail, which brings in the balance. Because it's saying the father's arranged it. Now we just take it that he decides, he manages it, he gets it done, and the daughter just says yes. But here is that she has expressed her desire, a suitable husband corresponding to her character, her age, and her quality. And then the father, out of affection, he gets it done. It's not just the duty. It's the duty is there because it's the natural thing that goes with affection. Does that make sense? Vedic culture is designed based on affection, right? The spiritual world, everybody does everything out of affection. Right? So what they do in the spiritual world out of affection, that's what is called duties here. Right? So ultimately, the whole purpose, like it says here, just suitable for his purpose, is to recreate that relationship with the Lord. Right? But to do that, you practice that on that reflection here. Does that make sense? So then the nature here, the relationship here, than is based on what would be our natural relationship with the Lord and the devotees in that capacity based on affection. But if not, at least we follow the rules that give rise to affection, right? If I follow the rules long enough, generally the spontaneous aspect arises, right? So I want that spontaneous aspect to be generated off of something consistent that you can do, right? Rules you can always follow, right? You're crazy at the party, you know, and you jump out the window into the pool. How many times can you do that? Can you do that at every party? You know, it's kind of like, oh, here he goes again, jumping out the window. You know, it's, kind of like, you know, it's not a big, you know, it's not spontaneous anymore. You understand? So the modern concepts of spontaneity, they do it once. They do it twice. By the third time, it's, you know, that's old. But the Vedic spontaneous, it can always be spontaneous because it's based on the rules that can always be performed. You understand the difference? So that's why the Vedas, it's always about the rules and duties, because it's about getting to the spontaneous platform, to the platform of affection. Right? Now that's, it may be a foreign concept. Right? Because we do things because we want the result, we want the benefit, rather than we're doing it out of affection. So here, Father's supposed to take care of this, he does it out of duty. Now, that duty should generate into affection with time. Or, by other duties, he already has affection. It should be already there's affection there by the time the girl's at a marriageable age. Then yes. That duty is performed nicely. Because duties done with affection aren't a burden.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like that. Okay, I can't remember what's the... Remember the thing is, the Prabhupada's talking about worship of the deity in the temple? And then he uses Galagraha. And then he gives the other term, that's the ex-pancharatic term for the deity. He says it's either the one, which is the deity and affection for the deity, or two, it's a stone hanging around the neck. You know? So you're burdened by it. Yeah, you understand? So that's the whole thing. If there's affection, deity worship isn't a problem. If there's no affection, it's a burden. So in the same way, the Vedic duties, if there's affection, then they're not a burden at all. If there's not affection, it's a problem. Right? So at least if there's no affection, then there should be a sense of duty, so that the sense of duty drives you on, or there must be motive passion, there's something you want from it, so you'll do the duties and you don't. Either way, then you won't feel it. But the natural is you're doing it because of affection. And that, then, you see the connection with the Lord. Then you actually get some eternal benefit. So all that work, all that affection, you might as well get some eternal benefit. Right? Does that make sense? Devahuti, she has affection for her husband and for her children. But from doing that in the sense of duty, that has now freed her from the attachment to the material world. So now she should sincerely ask how to get out of the material world. Does that make sense? Yes.
So Maharaj, real affection amongst humans, can we have a... In order to have real affection for a human being, we need to have some feeling for Krishna.
Yes, natural. The point is if you have affection for the whole, then you can have affection for the part.
Yes.
That. It's just like, if you like the person, then generally the attributes of the person you like.
Yes.
But you can have where you like the attributes of the person, but you're not really interested in the person.
Yes.
You know. Does that make sense? So for people with that mentality, that's why God created, you know, discos. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the whole point is that external doesn't mean you like the person. So that's why the Vedic is on the person, then what the person is connected with the person you like. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that the higher includes the lower. It already includes the lower. But if you only focus on the lower, because you're not getting the higher, then if anything changes, you know, like the thing is it's you go through life, you feel like the same person, right? You know, you may mature, you may adjust some of your, you know, what you thought was important when you're young. You can have more maturity. You see either going to a higher level of it or the lack of importance of it, like this. But you feel you're the same person. Okay? Now, you have in a relationship that one is telling the other, oh, you've changed. So what's changed? The person's changed, the person's not. No, the detail has changed. The secondary may change. But that's natural. That's what maturity means. Does that make sense? So if it's based on the principle, then the maturing process isn't a problem. But if it's based on the externals, then there's going to be a problem. Now we're talking about those who are matched. We're not talking about those who are not matched. That answered your question.
I was just thinking what you're saying about the lower and the higher. Yeah. So I'm thinking if I feel affection for Krishna, then if there's some part, some service maybe I don't like doing, the more affection I create for Krishna, the more...
It makes it easy to do, but the point is there's a service you're doing, but the point, the Vedic concept, you should be doing services you like to do. Mm-hmm. What you like to do, services that are in your nature. Mm-hmm. Sitting on a couch all day, pushing buttons on a remote, now that's not a service, and that's not a nature. I mean, it is a nature. Probably your next life will be a wombat or something. But sloth, right? Sloth hang out on the couch all day, just you hang out, you put your feet up, right? You know, like that. You know, so sloths hang upside down. You know, yeah, good. You know, bother the guy on the couch. He may, you know, say some sharp things. You know, sloths have sharp nails. You know, so, yeah, it goes. But as a general thing, they're not generally seen as, you know, they're not your standard, pets, you can say, stuff like that. So I knew one devotee, he said he had a sloth, but his parents got rid of it because it was too dangerous because of the nails. That was along with the boa constrictor. And, Is that okay? So in other words, it's matched. So that's why the point is leadership means being able to understand the nature of the individual and engage them according to that nature. It's not a matter of, no, if you do a duty that you don't want to do, that's surrender. That's mode of ignorance. Performance of duties, right? That's not coming from the mode of goodness, right? The point is I'm supposed to do my duties. I'm supposed to be qualified to do my duties. That means who I'm working with has to be qualified, right? So it's not that the higher level of Bushido is that I am perfectly serving a bad master, because it's harder. But sometimes devotees think, if I do a service I don't like to do, that's more surrender to Krishna. But how well will you do the service if you don't like to do it? So it's about pleasing Krishna. It's about getting the results for Krishna. The surrender is just so you get results for Krishna. So it's not that to surrender is the focus. That's a secondary aspect. Because if you surrender, then you can have a relationship. You don't surrender. So that's the first thing. If I don't open the door, I can't get into the house. So is it all about opening the door? We all stand around on the porch and talk about the door and opening the door. And each one of us takes it. You open the door. No. You open the door. You know, and all this kind of thing like that. And then he sits around, whistles, claps, you know, drinks out the champagne. You know, it's like that. You know, it's like, you know, the point is to go into the house. Does that make sense? So sometimes we put too much emphasis on this, like in the 90s when this Shraddha Prema came up. And you know, first was talking about that, then it became a very big issue to talk about anartha nivritti. But it's not about anartha nivritti, it's about prema. It's one of the stages that you have to deal with. Does that make sense? Cooking, you need clean pots, so you have to wash pots. So it's not about cleaning the pots. You know, otherwise, if you're a cleanliness fanatic, you're going to cook, oh no, you're getting that dirty, oh no, that's dirty. You know, then you can't cook. If I use the pot and while the next thing's cooking, I wash it. One is I don't have to clean it later, which is a big headache. And two, if I need to use it again, it's ready. So it's efficient for cooking. It's part of the duties. So the cleanliness supports the cooking. Do you understand? So that's the whole thing. Surrender is to do that. So the idea is if you can do the duty that matches your nature, you would choose that first. If that's not available, then you choose the next best. You understand? And you just keep going down the line until you get to, you know, something that works. You know, that's available. You know what I'm saying? It's like your nature, you would be, you know, driving the Formula One racer because you have the license, but, you know, nothing's available, so you're driving the golf car down at the club. At least you're driving. Does that make sense? So you choose what's within your nature, not something different from your nature. Then if what's within your nature is not available, then you take something else. Unless it's a matter of this is high grade, that's high grade, and you can adjust with it. But generally, within your nature, that's why you see, Manu says, is the Brahmins, if they can't do their natural duty, then they perform aspects within their duties that's not recommended. You know what I'm saying? Like you only perform samskaras for this class of people. If that's not available, then you whatever's the next best, right? You go begging from good quality Brahmins' houses. You can't do that. You might beg from the king. It's not recommended, but okay, right? It's just like if someone's giving charity, I take on reactions, right? Now, I beg from a high-class Brahmin, how much reaction do I get? Not a whole lot. How much I get's not a whole lot either, but hey, it works out. Now I can go beg from the king, I get from the king. Now what reaction do I get? Just the king's? No, I get 1/6 of the country. Right? You get more, on both sides. So it's not recommended. Does that make sense? So that's always the next best. If you can't do that, then you do the duties of a Kshatriya. If not, then the duties of a Vaishya. Does that make sense? So that's how you figure out how it goes. So it's not ideal, but it works. So that's the whole point. So as an individual, you should know that so you can situate yourself. And as an authority, you should know that so you can help people get situated. Both of them. But just this matter, it needs to be done. Okay, that's good as emergency, but after that, it's not. Right? Everybody needs to be out on Sankirtan because it's the Christmas marathon. Okay, that's emergency. But, come January 1st, the cook goes back in the kitchen, the pujari goes back on the altar, the guy with the mop and the bucket goes back to the hallways. And if you think, wow, this is great, and let's keep everybody out, how you say 12 marathons a year, and then you'll find that the amount of people in your temple just starts disappearing. And then you're going, why? This is the best. They're not sincere. Why? Because he doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know how to engage someone according to nature.
So if I was told that you should do whatever services needed to be done in that,
That's there, but it should be judged that it's not just, okay, we'll just run an emergency mode. There is such a thing in managing and planning ahead, and it's not being an emergency.
So the authority should know how to
do that. And then if there is an emergency, then you pick the person for the job. So it's like that. But you plan to work not on emergency. In other words, the ideal is everybody's working according to their nature, not according to emergency. Emergencies come up, then everybody should do what needs to be done. It's like, it's your job to wake the deities now, but there's a fire, somewhere in the temple. So you can't say, well, it's my job to wake the deities and walk off. You go find a bucket and get some water. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is emergency, that whoever can do, that's done. But it can't be said that that's standard. Oh, it worked. Yeah, because the person's dutiful, they imbibe themselves, it works. But it's not going to work beyond that. Does that make sense? In other words, you know, for the 15 minutes on the bus, the brahmachari does cook lunch. It's an emergency. Otherwise, everybody starves. You know? Does that make sense? But if you decide to make him the cook, you got a problem. Okay? Okay, so we understand there's always a balance. So in other words, it's the desire of the daughter, what she's looking for, which means she has to be trained to know what to look for.
Yes.
Right? So that means the parents have trained. Now she, naturally being trained, knows what she wants. And now the father, having trained, she's understood. She went, now he arranges. Is that makes sense? You know. So like that, then the whole process is going. It's always back and forth. It's never just this one direction. That's the difficult. That's why the Western always has to have restraints, because in the West they always talk about checks and balances. The Vedic, it's already there. Right? If everyone just performs their duty based on authority of Shastra, the check and balance is there, because God is God, being perfect, whatever system comes from him is complete and perfect. Right? So then it's a perfect system. You follow it, it already if you understand it or you don't understand it, it works. Right? But the difficulty is if we speculate, how can we work out all the knowledge of the universe and get it all perfectly balanced? You know, we don't have long enough to live. Right? You can't work it out. So Krishna already knows. It already works perfectly. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's why then we work on that principle. We don't work on something else. Yeah? So yes. So you'll always find, if you look, you can see already the checks and balances is already inherently part of the process. Right? It's not separate. Like that. But the West, they come up with an idea, then something doesn't work, so then they have to come up with a balance, if they don't already throw it out and start with something new, which is general what they do. You know what I'm saying? But it's always about, oh, no one should have too much authority. Right? Because in the Western scenario, it will be misused. Right? It's just like this. Okay. Louis wasn't a great king. Okay? How many heads did he cut off? Okay.
Some.
How many when huh?
Some.
Some. How about when Robespierre G started his program? Yeah, okay. Now, how many people died under the Tsar and his father? Right? 7 million. In wars, trying to expand the country, this, that. You know, they may be avaricious, it wasn't necessary, but whatever it is, 7 million. How many died under Stalin's arrangement?
60 million.
60 million. Now it's officially 60?
Yeah, that's
in 40 and 60.
40 and 60, because like 10 years ago it was around 30.
Well, what, 20 is the great war.
Yeah, so it's like...
Well,
and so you understand what I'm saying? So that's the point, is it doesn't matter. Say what you want. That higher class, it has some training and stuff like that. There is some restriction, though they may have attitude that's really annoying. But you switch it, and, you know, they don't have any airs about them, but at the same time, as you know, it may not go so well. You understand? So... if you're not following the Vedic principle, it will be rough. Anybody with authority, it will be a problem. If you follow the Vedic, then it has its inherent checks and balances if you follow your duties. So that's how it's supposed to work. So you don't have to worry. If you understand it, better. Even if you don't understand it, it works perfectly. Because it's not speculative, it's given by the Lord. So every time when you're looking at something, you'll always see there's one thing here, but then, like we were saying before, the father arranges it, this, that, because that was the discussion. We were discussing that principle. Now we get down to here, now we see this other aspect. We're seeing details of it and all how it functions, the culture of it. But generally, because we worry about, you know, I and mine, control and what I can get from that, then I'm only going to see that, okay, you know, it's supposed to be arranged. We don't see the detail, which is the relationship, the affection. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the problem. So we'll pick what matches our conditioning of, you know, I and mine. Mm-hmm. And other things we won't notice, which is okay. You know, everyone has their nature. Still. Manu continued, the moment she heard from the sage Narada of your noble character, learning, beautiful appearance, youth, and other virtues, she fixed her mind upon you. 10. Srila Prabhupada writes, the girl Devahuti did not personally see Kardama Muni, nor did she personally experience his character or qualities, since there was no social intercourse by which she could gain such understanding. But she heard about Kardama Muni from the authority of Narad Muni. Hearing from an authority is a better experience than gaining personal understanding. Right? So here Narad Muni is saying what it is. He's not fluffing it up a bit. Kardama is his brother, so he's trying to make it look good, you know, like that. No, he's just saying what is there. So that's the point, because authority can get into all the details. You can ask questions and this and that. It's a bit more uncomfortable to directly ask the person. But the authority can be there, watch, know, see, and then they can ask, okay, well, what's this, what's that, why are they doing this, why are they doing it? They can ask all those things very directly. You don't need diplomacy. Right? Does that make sense? So it's better. It's better an experience than gaining from personal understanding. Because you can say, no, personally I'll gain more. But personally you have the time, place, and circumstance that is adjusting that. Does that make sense? So you won't. You know, even just like, let's say this. Okay, you have an understanding of yourself. Now, you could definitely say that you have personal experience of yourself. Right? You would have to admit to that as a basis. Now, there's probably a lot of things that your mom can say about you that you don't even necessarily acknowledge. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So therefore, the mother talking about you, so many things will come out that even you don't know. Does that make sense? So that's the point of authority. That's why it's a better system. Right? If you don't have it, then you have to figure it out yourself. But that's not an ideal thing. That's not your primary. That's when the primary is not available. Right? Yes.
If we little back, we spoke about the equal nature, equal
right,
character.
Right, right.
Let's say the girl's nature is not ideal. Wouldn't it be better for her to marry somebody with a better nature so she can come up?
But the point is okay, you're sitting in the middle of an ocean, right? And there's a boat, right? And the deck is, 10 meters above the water, okay? So, how do those two go together? You're saying, okay, I'd rather, instead of being in the ocean, I'd rather be on the deck of the boat. How does that happen?
Can you climb?
Okay, you can climb, okay.
No, you can't. It's too high.
Okay. Yeah, you can't climb. So you have to throw the rope. So unless there's a rope, how is it going to work? So unless the nature of the boy is able to accommodate that of the girl and elevate it, then you're just going to have two natures that are incompatible. Like that. So if you want to do that, great, but then you have to look for that aspect. But then at the same time, is then the girl has to want to become elevated. It's not that the parents arranged it that way and she's fine how she is. Then better she marries somebody who's like that also. You know what I'm saying? So you're always trying to improve, but it has to be that someone wants to. That's what we opened with. Is that because Swayambhuva Manu is behaving as a proper disciple, therefore now he can expect, to some reciprocation. Does that make sense? So, if the girl wants to elevate, and therefore she marries a boy who's of a higher standard, and then she works very hard to get that, and he has the character to be able to accommodate when there'll be some mistakes, then that'll work nicely. Because just with practice, if there's desire and practice, it'll happen. Right? Does that make sense? Because you're talking about character here. You're not talking about change of nature. So in other words, it's still going to be let's say, a Brahminical girl, the boy with a higher standard of Brahminical culture, she wants that, then that's there. It's not you take a Shudra that, like that. No, it still has to be there. It's just that. That makes sense. Because in any case, you want a boy that's of some little bit better than the girl. Anyway. You know, it's just like Damayanti is the most beautiful female in the universe. Right? So who does she marry? Because he's got to be a little better. So he has to be the most beautiful living entity in the universe. Right? So then you have a match. Yeah. That's other than Lord Vishnu. Right? But of all the material personalities, they were the most beautiful. You know, then it matches. Is that something? You know, just like it didn't work out for Quasimodo and the girl, right? You know, it didn't quite match. No?
I don't know the story, I just know the guy has a bump.
That's Notre Dame, come on. How do you say it?
Notre Dame.
I'm very happy. I don't know the story.
Okay. You know the story.
Maharaj, among the sons of Brahma, Narada is considered the authority, the spiritual authority.
You could say Narada is the authority, the four Kumaras the authority, Shiva is the authority. Because these are, when it's to deal with transcendental things, they're the authority. Dealing with Dharma, then Swayambhuva is going to be the authority in general. But if you're talking about getting the understanding of it from the devotional point of view, more direct devotional point of view, then Narada would be the authority. But you need to already know, you know, Swayambhuva, you know, to apply it. Because Narad Muni is not giving the details of how it operates. He's giving the attitude that you look at it. In other words, it's just like you have the Vedic Mahabharata, then you have the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. So the Mahabharata was supposed to establish this, but because there's so many things discussed, you may miss the point of the pure devotional service. Mm-hmm. So in Bhagavatam being the essence, it doesn't miss that. But if you want to know technical details of how Yudhishthira managed his kingdom, then you need to look at Mahabharata. Bhagavatam's not going to discuss that because it's getting the essence. So in the same way, Narad Muni is not going to discuss the details because it's already there in mind. Right? So like that. Daksha would be, you know, when it comes to Karmakanda, he's an authority. Right? So like that. So everybody has their position, what they're... But the spiritual, that would be... Devotional, specifically Narad Muni. Transcendental, that will be the Kumaras, right? And then the kind of Avadhut position, that will be Shiva. Does that make sense?
And they know how to relate with each other.
I've never heard that there's been an argument between them, so it seems that they get along okay. Planets, they seem to have issues, but these ones don't seem to have issues. Is that because they're the most pious, so naturally everything will work very well.
And they have all affection for the Lord.
Basically. Daksha seems to be a bit more mundane. Like that. But it seems Swayambhuva... And others, but Daksha is the only one I've heard that is not. He gets overwhelmed by the material position. So it's not so much that he's just presenting it like the six systems. They may know the proper conclusion, but they're presenting for those who are interested in only that aspect. Right? So you get that, because they're all disciples of Vyasa, but same time as they may take different things. They may notice, just like I mentioned, there was he was a student of Nikhil Banerjee, so he's one of the top, you know, you could say top few handful of Indian sitarists. And So there's some certain techniques that in that line they use. But they don't teach them. They're just, they're background things. They teach the main. These are just background. Right? So one day I happened to come when his he introduced me into his to a student who was his oldest student, meaning he had been a student for 20 years. And then after the introduction, because it was class, so then he started playing, you know, showing what he could play. Plays nice because he's studied for 20 years, but all those background things, he wasn't using any of them. And then after he had left, then I asked him, why doesn't he use these things? He's saying because he never noticed them. He says, we don't teach those. We teach the main part. These are our embellishments. Like that. You catch it, then we'll show you. If you don't catch it, we don't explain it. And so here's a student of 20 years, he didn't even notice it. So in the same way, as there may be students of Vyasa, maybe they're noticing, maybe they're not, but by how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada discussed, they know. But because there's a need for engaging all the mentalities that there may be within the material world, in karma and jnana, therefore the six systems are there so that everybody at least is following the Veda. Right? So, though they know the conclusion, they're writing for that audience. You know, just like Vyasadeva wrote the Puranas from the perspective, the mode of ignorance for those people. It's not that he's in the mode of ignorance, because then he writes the Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? So like that. Then you'll have these things. So, but we see from Daksha's actions that he may not have so much realization like the other brothers. He's very expert. Daksha means expert. So when it comes, you see, when it comes to having kids, none of the other Prajapatis have kids like he has kids. So he's the most expert. Right? He has sons. But then when Narad Muni makes all his sons into devotees, he decides, I'm having daughters, and he has daughters. So Prabhupada points out, he's expert. He can decide. He's having a son, he's having a daughter. Yeah. Okay. She heard from Narad Muni that Kardama Muni was just fit to be her husband. Therefore, she became fixed in her heart that she would marry him, and she expressed her desire to her father, who therefore brought her before him. Right. So there should be that aspect that's there, and then it's confirmed. It works nicely, just like we see. Krishna, another example, Krishna has thought that it would be better for Subhadra to marry Arjuna. But he checks. He checks first. And also, what's his name? Arjuna doesn't want to marry her unless she's interested. Right? But you see Jayadratha or Karna, that they want to marry her despite her mentality. Right. So there is that aspect. So you have both, where you have those who don't worry about that and those who do. So those who do, that's the standard. That others don't follow it, that's not the standard. That's just their misunderstanding, lack of realization. Understand? Therefore, please accept her, O chief of the Brahmanas, for I offer her with faith, and she is in every respect fit to be your wife and takes charge of her household duties. Footnote 11. In his purport to verse 11, Srila Prabhupada gives concrete precedence for married life. For a grihastha, a qualified wife is an assistant in every respect for advancement in spiritual activities. It is the duty of the wife to take charge of household affairs and not to compete with the husband. A wife is meant to help, but she cannot help her husband unless he is completely equal to her in age, character, and quality. Right? So if she's supposed to help, then it has to be equal nature. Otherwise, if it's not equal nature, she'll be doing things that he won't consider her help. So how is it going to be help? So it's not she's unsubmissive. No, the nature doesn't match. So most of the time when you say it's incompatible, it's because the nature doesn't match. Right? Because the point is, so here's also the balance. It's his house, but who manages it? She manages it. Not that he tells her do this, 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 and then she gets it done. No, it's his house. She runs it how she sees it should be run. Now, it will be run according to how he would like it because their natures are equal. You understand? So it's very subtle. So it's not managerial here. It's character, nature. That's what we're matching. Then the other things automatically come in place. Is that my sense? Yes, so that's the
you know, when you know somebody, one family approach another family, or sometimes there'll be refusals, you know, when we're not interested. So I think there's some culture in place because the girl will not take to a refusal with as much ease as a boy, for example. She'd be more like
no, that's why the parents work things out. Point is unless you have found something that you think is going to work, you don't even make the effort, right? If there's 100 choices, but only 5 are actually going to, you know, look to be serious, you don't worry about the other 95. You don't even discuss them. You already cut it down to that.
So when the girl,
you know, it's just like this. When you, if you sit down at the restaurant, you don't know the place. You either ask the other person who brought you there or the waiter, what's, you know, what do they recommend? So there's 20 things on the menu, and they'll say 2 or 3. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing, is you already whittle it down. They don't discuss all the other things. They don't go through all 20 preps and say, well, this is this, that, and this is that, and this is nice for this, but that, but you would prefer you this and that, so I don't think this one's for you. And then keep going like that. No, you just get down to these are.
Yeah. So it's already been worked out that the boy is willing when the girl is brought into it? Like she would be proposed willing candidate?
It's still fluid because it has to be that you're looking for what you're looking for, and then there's the thing, but then there's the arrangement to try to see that it works. Swami Bhuvamana doesn't know if he'll accept. That's why he's doing his best to try to present it so he does. Right, so there's still that effort. She's accepted. That may be rejected, but that's the way it goes. You know what I'm saying? But it has to be that you've already reduced it down to. So now here is that, hasn't then the father, and then he explains it, then she wants. Or now she's heard from Narad Muni, then she expresses it to the father, and then he arranges. So the point is that there's the actual effort to see that it happens. So you have to see that it works. But it should be that it's, is everything's nice so that you have a good idea that this should happen. Right? You know, just like you decide you want to go out to the restaurant, you have a generally pretty good idea that restaurant's there and you're able to get to it. You know, not that you forgot to turn on the 6 o'clock news and found that an alien spacecraft had crashed into it and so it doesn't exist anymore. So when you get there, all you see is those little, you know, yellow tapes up and all that, and police cars around.
So,
like that, you understand? So you are working on that. It basically will work. You know, you don't decide that. Okay, you know, we're, you know, whatever it is in Atlanta, and the sandwich that we want to eat, you know, with my friends, is over in Boulder, Colorado. So we'll get in our private jet and fly over there. And, you know, in the meantime, you know, because it'll take a couple of hours, we call ahead and they come and deliver it at the airport. So if you can pull that off, great. But otherwise, generally, you work on something that's attainable. They're not going to Russia for a Russian sandwich. Right? You know, from there. No, by that time it'll be breakfast. You won't want it, right? You know, so therefore they're going with something that will match. Something?
Yes.
Yeah. No?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the whole thing. It's okay, so people will catch this stuff. Okay, she, you know, take charge of your household duties. But then it's take charge means take charge, not take charge means I'm telling you what to do and you get it done. That's not taking charge.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense? Then, or do we take, a wife is meant to help. Oh, see, she's just supposed to help. But it says she cannot help unless there's completely equal to her in age, character, and quality. Right? And equal means what's compatible. Equal doesn't mean the same. You know, it's like I go to serve the soup, I put down a big bowl, and then I put down a bowl that's just a little smaller than that, you know, next to it. Right? So then I pour the soup in the big bowl and expect you to get the soup out of the big bowl with the little bowl and eat it. Not so compatible. Now, a bowl and a spoon, that's compatible, but they're different. You know, you say, oh, exact equality, so the exact same bowl and then another exact same bowl. That's really not going to work. So it says you have to be able to look the further points. Otherwise, we catch what we want to hear, how we think it should go. You know, I mean, in other words, there's the Bhagavatam version of the system, and then there's the pub version of the system. So the two don't exactly match. You know.
Okay. That's why we don't go to the pub.
Yes, that's why we don't go to the pub, right? If we read Bhagavatam, we don't go to the pub.
Limited to one piece of paper.
Yeah, plus it's a little early at this time, we might go to the pub. Okay. Okay. Next, Manu establishes request on basis of Shastra, right? He's pointing out that their equalness in nature, then he's saying that she'll therefore be a good, be able to assist nicely in this arrangement, right? Because you can't assist nicely if there's not equality, right? So that's been established. Now he's going to the Shastra things. Those are on Shastra, but that it's more talking about just the application. Well, now he's getting into, the theory, right? Does that make sense? Because you're dealing with an emotional issue, so generally you start with, results and processes, and then you get back to the theory. You don't start with the... Does that make sense? Yeah. To deny an offering that has come of itself is not commendable for one absolutely free from all attachment, much less one addicted to sensual pleasure. One who rejects an offering that comes of its own accord, but later begs a boon from a miser, thus loses his widespread reputation, and his pride is humbled by the neglectful behavior of others. 12 to 13. A cultural lesson from Srila Prabhupada is the substance of this purport. Right? So now we're talking about, this is niti. You want something, if it comes of its own accord, take it. Not, oh, well, actually, I'd like this. No, just take it. Because you can't guarantee that detail you want. In other words, in principle it's there, it matches, it's okay. But you were thinking a little different detail. Don't do that, because that different detail may not be there. And then, because it's not there, you want that, now you're going to have to go beg from someone else. And that someone else, because you're approaching them, they'll be neglectful. Right? They're approaching you, it'll be with all proper mentality. You approach them, then it'll be neglectful. You understand? So that's the thing. So that's for someone who is free from all detachment. Something necessary comes, take it. Then let alone for someone who is attached, better you take it. So the one wouldn't take it because I'm detached, I don't really... it's not important, though actually it's part of the, it's necessary. And the other one will take it because they're attached to something else, they don't want to take it. So both points are made. Right? You shouldn't reject it because, it's not so important, then later on you're doing it. You understand? Or, I could get something else and then you find it's not there. Right? Someone say, hey, you want something to eat, dear? You are hungry. You are looking for something, but you're thinking, well, it's a day, but if I go home, I'll get something better. Right? So you don't take it. Then you go home and you find out, something's there and the wife's not there and you're on your own. I say, you go into the kitchen and greeted by Maggie G. Right?
Okay. That makes sense.
What's my name?
Maggie noodles.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in your microwave.
Yeah.
Okay. You understand? And then you'll be thinking back, oh, I should have taken that. So that's what the point is. If it's something that you're interested in, it's something necessary, even though it may be different when you imagine, take it.
Like in our movement, sometimes Guru will make, arrange the marriage for disciples. But as far as I noticed, many of them failed. The marriage failed. So
well, they failed. Okay, in all the marriages in China, how many were arranged by Guru?
I mean, in early stage.
No, but I'm just saying in general.
Yes, maybe 7, 10 or like 12.
Oh, and wait a minute. 10 marriages didn't produce 1 billion people. You know, unless we're talking about some serious Prajapatis. There's something about Chinese history that hasn't been revealed. So when you say the Middle Kingdom, you mean it. Okay, right? So now, out of all those millions of marriages, right, then all of them worked except for the ones arranged by those gurus. Right? Direct scientific proof. Right? Okay. Now you say, okay, then the person decides to arrange their own marriage. What percentage of them are working? So the arrangement is part of it, the actual operating within it. Right? Let's say I go out and get first-class ingredients for you to cook, and you do a bad job. Now can you say that, well, he arranged the ingredients, that's why it was bad? No, the cooking was bad. You understand? You have to consider that aspect, because it's always looking at it that the arrangement was bad. Maybe the arrangement was bad, maybe it was good. But unless you make the endeavor, even the best arrangement won't work. Right? Right? 3-star chef, first class ingredients, what do you get? It works. Why? Because everything matches, everything works. Right? Bachelor, can of beans, it matches, it works. Right? As long as this is zip top, if it's one of the ones you need to think, then there's a problem. Okay? That's why they stick to beans, because when they use the knife, it ruins the knife, so they can't use it for anything else. Right?
You can't cook.
Huh?
You can't cook after the beans.
That's why it's zip top. Okay? Yeah? So therefore, it may be bad arrangement, it may not be. You can see marriages that were arranged from very early days that are still going on now perfectly fine. And you can see ones that, you know, didn't make it out of the gate. So it's all there. So now it may be a bad arrangement, but the point is it comes down to, unless you make the endeavor, it's not going to work. So blaming it all on the guru arranged it. No, you agreed to it. Yeah? Okay. A boy should not go to the girl's father and ask for the hand of his daughter in marriage. That is considered to be humbling one's respectable position. Right? Because, which is worse? Going to be the boy's rejection or the girl's rejection?
Yeah, the boy's rejection.
Means the boy's being rejected. But I'm saying who's going to reject in a stronger way?
The girl.
The girl. So that's why it's putting it in this order.
Yes.
It's not that the girl may not be more affected than the boy, but the rejection itself will be stronger. You know, it's just like, you know, if you go to the boys' house and they're not interested, no, we're not interested. Yeah. You go to the girls' house, what, you think you can marry her? You know, it's going to be stronger. It's going to be much worse. So that's why it's not recommended that the boy goes to the girl's father. That is considered to be humbling one's respectable position. So, now, of course, one may ask, what if one's not respectable? So it doesn't matter. Okay. Swayambhuva Manu wanted to convince Kardama Muni, since he knew that the sage wanted to marry a suitable girl. It's like, so he already knew he wants to get married. Right? You don't go. You don't just decide, oh, and then go up to somebody and ask. You first find out, does the person want to get married? Is a brahmachari? Does he want to get married or not? Otherwise, you don't go up and ask, and then he says no. And then you're thinking, is he rejecting my daughter or this or that? Or so you just know. He wants to get married. He doesn't want to get married. If he doesn't want to get married, why bother? Right? Is that okay? Yeah. So then you know. So he already knows Kardama wants to get married. Right? And he's looking for someone suitable. Right? So basically, they already know everything. He's an emperor. Why wouldn't he know everything? Right? That's his job.
How could he know?
Facebook?
No,
that's what God made Facebook. So that you can know. Of course, then you have to look at the gender category, and after you figure out that, the 56 options, then you have to figure out if you want to get involved.
Check history.
No, you have people, you talk, you find out. That's the point. You have to do your homework.
They are brothers.
Yeah, they're also their brothers,
and
but Nard is there. You know, you have to take that. But it's the principle. There, it's, you know, because you don't get into that so much because you're looking at it because these are all mind born, so you don't have blood relations. That's why they can marry intermarry. But once the Prajapatis, there's blood relations, then you can't intermarry. Then the whole thing of Gotras, all that, apply. You understand? So that's why we don't emphasize the aspects of all of their relations. Does that make sense? Because at this point, you don't have anything. It's only when you have blood relations, then you're talking about the generations, you know, that or the lines, you know, cousins, or, you know, all these different things. That's only because of blood relation. But if there's no blood relation, then there's no consideration. Right? Does that make sense? Because you don't want to mix the bloodlines. But they're mind-born, so it's not, you know. It's just like this. The hand is working with the head, right? Not a problem. Right, so one's born from the head, one's born from the hand. You know, so it's like, you know, it's not a problem. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. Quote: I am offering such a suitable wife. Do not reject the offer, or else, because you are in need of a wife, you will have to ask for such a wife from someone else, who may not behave with you so well, right? Because Swayambhuva is coming very respectable. But otherwise, he may have to go, and it may be a whole problem. Right? Like when Chavana went to the king and asked for his daughter, it didn't work out so well in the beginning. Of course, he had his methods to convince the king, right? But, yeah. In that case, your position will be humbled. Right? So he's a great personality. So he's pointing out, you're looking for a suitable person. This girl is a suitable match. And, you know, it's come on its own accord. Right? And the culture, the interaction is very proper. Therefore, take it. Yeah?
Why do you need so much to convince him he wasn't sure about his daughter, or he wasn't sure about Haradama's accepting her.
He's the father.
He should be proud.
There is the outside of the... You might find that outside of the Middle Eastern kind of environment, the pride and the position of the daughter and all that is a little bit more covert. And in the same line, is you also have the element that you don't have the problem if it doesn't quite work out, no one comes along with a bottle of acid or something. In other words, the family tradition does have the aspect of the girl involved, but it's not totally about the girl. So you do have that there is the pride. That's why he's making the statement. But he's making it based on the Shastra. So it's not just his feeling.
Is there also the element that he's on from a lower varna?
That's there, because you have guru-disciple kind of relationship.
So it's like, he's not from Brahmana family.
No, but at the same time is... But that's not emphasized either, because here we're looking at equal nature. Because that's what he's already pointed out, is that the Brahmin and the Kshatriya are basically the same entity. Otherwise, where's the equality? Right? But at the same time, is they're accepting this position because they're talking to each other like this. Because that's between them. Now, the boy and girl, they match. Right? We're not marrying, Swayambhuva Manu and Kardama Muni. Right? We're marrying their children. We're marrying the daughter and Kardama Muni. So they have a match. Is that?
Yeah.
So you always have to see that those things work. Does that make sense? So there has to be a balance. So he sees before us, because the balance is a little out. So because you do have that there are those who will be very proud based on the position of the daughter. But you can actually only be really proud when someone comes to you. Yes. Right. If I go to the market, what price do I pay?
Whatever people ask.
Yeah, the market price. And if they come door to door, what do I pay? Yes. You understand? So that's there. So it's not that the pride's not there, but you have to know how to apply it. Right? Because he said this, that you should take this, even though it's come. It's technically kind of a point of advice. So there is that element of pride. But it's properly done through that, it's shastric, it fits the situation.
Good salesmanship.
Yeah, good sales. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives further emphasis. You should not say that you cannot accept my daughter because you are a detached ascetic. Sense objects would come of their own accord should not be denied. Knowing your inner desire, because the point is if you're detached, it's not that you... It's if you need to eat, if something nice comes to eat, you don't accept it because it's nice. You eat it. But at the same time, because you're detached, next time when something comes to eat and it's not necessarily nice, you eat it. You understand? So the Grihastha, they only eat things that are nice. Right? Vanaprasthas generally eat things that are not necessarily that great. You understand? Sannyas means you don't care. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that he's pointing out, because the mentality of sannyas is the actual principle that you're looking for in the Vedic culture. So if you're detached, it should be detached that this is good. We're not saying it's not good, but you're detached, so you should be able to accept good. Right? Just like we see later, he'll be able to accept just going out and wandering in the world. Right? So from a guy who has a flying palace that can go anywhere in the world, then after that, leaving that with his wife, then he goes out and wanders around the world without a flying palace. So that's the thing, is that these two balance each other. You're always trying to get that balance. Does that make sense? Yeah, because otherwise that point four is the pride's about the girl, but it's not about the girl, it's about the family. Right? So therefore there's the overemphasis in that way, but then if something goes wrong with the girl because it affects the family, then it also affects the girl. You understand? So it's not about the girl, but in here, the family is there, it has to match, but the girl is the prominent because it's about the wedding. Right? You understand? So being the wedding, she has to be the central feature. You should not conceal your desire. Knowing your inner desire, I've come here. You should not conceal your desire from me. Right? So there is the element is that if you're dealing on a certain level, you have desire for something, you shouldn't conceal it. You understand? Otherwise, how will the relationship go nicely? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's, oh, here's this. Oh, no. Oh, that's so material. Oh, that's all like this and that. And then after everyone goes, then you have to run after. That's not good. That's okay for so just on the social level. But if you're here, you're talking about relations now. So then you want to see that you have that level of interaction, that openness is there. So it's like, I know you have the desire, you shouldn't just say I don't have, because he is a renounced ascetic. Right? And so he says here, he identifies Kardama as Kama Raktasya. Right? So he's identifying someone with who's keeping that, right? This verse 13 speaks of conduct in this world. One who rejects something out of shyness and because of concern for position, then begs that object from one who will not give it, loses fame. Right? So many times is that you want to eat something, you know, you have so many preparations, you want to eat that, but you're a little shy, you know, so you want some, well, no, and then, okay, and then, well, who wants, I don't, not really, but okay, give, you know, and then you're thinking, no, I want it, he got it, you know, okay, if nobody wants it, then I'll take some after, but no, it's too late. You know, and then you have to be humbled that, you know, you end up with something you didn't want. Yeah.
So we see the dealings between men, they differ than the dealings between men and ladies and
yes,
vice versa.
Yes, yes. Just like ladies and ladies, they're very open.
Yeah.
Men and men is very open. But as soon as that's where I was saying is that that in the arrangement, then you're working men to men, women to women. You know, or in something that already is established. You've already, husband and wife have already established their interaction so they can discuss it like that. And so then, you know, or they already know how it works. They discuss with another couple, you know, based on those principles, they can make it work, though detailed. So, but you have girl, you have boy, they don't know any of this. And then to try to make that connection, it just isn't really going to happen. So that's why it's always worth to go through. Okay. Shyness and concern for position are soon destroyed by the strength of the desire. So even though it got in the way there, then you'll be running around trying to get something. You know, so then it's better to overcome the shyness. You know, like that. One's honor also is destroyed. That doesn't mean you're crass. It just means you're, you know. If they say you want some, you say yes. Yeah. One's honor also is destroyed. Even the wise man of mature vision should accept those objects not forbidden which come without asking by good fortune. After surmising that, even having detachment, it will be destroyed by the desire in one's mind. Right? So, if it's coming out of its own accord and it's not outside of one's duty, then one should accept it. Right. Like that. Because then if it's outside your desire, you deal with it in detachment, what will that do? Any remnants that there is of attachment for it will be destroyed by dealing with it in Naishkarma. So it's not a problem. Engaging the senses in Naishkarma, to please the Lord, is always going to remove anything. So it's not about the quality of what you engage. If you're detached, what does it matter what you're engaging? Does that make sense? So we see is that the Vedic, what it can function at is a much higher level. Like generally we look at just the details. Oh, he has this. Oh, that's not good. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
That means it's what destiny provides.
Yes, what destiny provides. Means if it's in your duty, you're making the endeavor, and then whatever comes from that endeavor, you get it. He made the endeavor. He did austerity. He approached the Lord, asked for the boon to have a proper wife, and now by providence, it's happened. So you should accept that.
So the relationship between man and woman has already been established, and I'm just wondering, what if the man or the woman knows they want to get married before the other party's already made their mind? It could happen if it's not.
If they're equally matched, it'll work out. You don't have to worry.
Just go naturally like that.
It doesn't mean that there's not difficulty, but it'll work out.
But does one approach, does the man approach the parents of the girl, or does the girl?
It's, as I mentioned, it's better that the girl is approaching the boys. But it can be done the other way, but you approach the parents, they like it, then they see if the girl, then it works out. So the arrangements are made by the father of the girl, though it may be initiated by the boy's family. But it's more risky that way. Yeah, because then the boy's after the girl, so the girl can be detached. Yeah. You know, what you want is detached boy, attached girl. That works. Yes. Attached boy, detached girl, not so good. Yes.
What if he made an endeavor and nothing came out?
So then that's just the way it is. You, within your duty. What's within your duty, you do that. You know, working 8 hours a day at a job, that's endeavor. Working 16, that's over-endeavor. Okay? Yeah, because otherwise it throws everything out of bounds. So you perform. If it comes, nice. If it doesn't come, that's just the way it works. Okay, so stop.